My guest on Simply Folk is a musician, yes, and his music has been recorded and broadcast on our airwaves over the years, but he's perhaps better known as a writer, and that's why he's here this time. Scott Alaric has written a book called Revival, a folk music novel. Welcome back to Wisconsin Public Radio, Scott.
It always feels right to home to be on Simply Folk.
Well, let's speak about home for a moment before we start talking about the book. You're based in Boston. Mm-hmm. The book is based in Boston. You've been writing in Boston, but you have some Midwestern roots, don't you?
Yes, I certainly do. I was born and raised in the Twin Cities, and when I was a traveling performer on the folk circuit, Wisconsin really was, it almost wasn't a second home. I think I played more in Wisconsin than I did anywhere else. And it's great being back. It's just wonderful being back.
Good. It's a wonderful state and such a wonderful sense of community here. Mm-hmm. Well, I have read the entire book. I loved it. It really brings the folk music scene alive. I liken it a little bit to enjoying historical fiction where you learn something about what you're reading about. You learn sort of the social history at the same time as you're enjoying a great story. And this is a great story. It's a love story. And the characters are deep and beautifully drawn. And they're flawed and they have struggles. All of it set in these open mics and festivals, and it really gives you a flavor for what it's like to be in the folk music scene today in the 21st century.
Yeah, I think of it as kind of a love story within a love story, that there's this story about these two very different songwriters who are drawn together by their shared passion for folk music, and they're both professional musicians but going in very different places at very different times in their careers. But it's also very much a love story to the folk world itself, to how a substream, non-commercial music or any kind of human art can survive and continue to grow in a culture like ours that is so dominated by very short-term corporate commercial interests. And it's, you know, how and what it's like to live in a world that is so powered by the energy of volunteers, of people who are just doing it for the love of it. And, of course, that's so true of the Wisconsin folk scene, and it's one of the things I've always loved about it.
Oh, it is. We have some wonderful organizations across the state, Green Apple up in the Green Bay Area, and Black Hawk, and we have the Mad Folk Society here in Madison, and they do. It's all run on a shoestring by volunteer power for the sheer love of the music and the feeling of the community.
It does so much to keep the music pure in an authentic, I mean, in a human way, which I think is what connects modern folk music to what it always was before. Is this desire to be the music of, by, and for real people, folks music.
Right,
and that's something I really wanted to celebrate in this novel, and it's been gratifying the response within the folk world, but also the people outside the folk world are discovering our dear little world through the book.
Well, not only that, but it's an award-winning book. You got the Benjamin Franklin Silver Award for fiction, right?
For popular fiction,
congratulations.
That's the biggest award in the indie book world, and it means a lot that the independent book world took the time to lift this little book up and give it the time to decide that it was worth it. Yeah.
Tell us about the protagonist, about Nathan in particular.
Well, Nathan Warren is a middle-aged songwriter who's everybody thought when he was young, everybody said this is the guy that's going to be the next big star. He signed a major label deal, but the album never came out for reasons that had nothing to do with his music, which destroyed him personally and professionally. And he's just climbing out of a probably decades-long bout of drinking and depression when the book begins. He hosts an open mic and a jam session in a little neighborhood bar called Dooley's, where he meets a young, very ambitious, very talented songwriter named Kit Palmer, who has just come through what she calls her precocious midlife crisis. And she's in her probably mid to late 20s, and she's just decided now is the time she needs to focus on something, and she's focusing on songwriting. But aside from that talent and being a great musician and a very dynamic person, she's completely un- prepared and unequipped for having a career in folk music. So this mentoring relationship begins and then blossoms into a deeper love between them.
I love how she first starts out on stage, so shy and self-conscious, mm-hmm. and she blushes bright red when things go wrong or when she's feeling a little bit embarrassed. And, but she keeps at it. She's persistent. She knows that this is her almost her destiny.
Yes,
and that it's her passion.
Right. And by the end of the pretty soon in the book, I think she's mentoring him as much, if not more, than he's mentoring her. And I very much wanted the book to be this kind of generational conversation and to show how tradition, it's tradition almost by definition is how the generations converse with each other and how they keep what's the best of their culture going from generation to generation and to explore what tradition means in the 21st century.
Nathan does this open mic out of sheer love of the music and for providing a context for beginners to play, to start to get some stagecraft. And there's a scene in the book where he goes to the back of the tavern and he wants to be kind of quiet and by himself. And why don't you do a reading from that?
Yeah, there's the folk jam that they do, there's the big one on the stage. But then there's a back room where people go and there's no stage and everybody just gathers around the tables. And Kit always finds the one where they sing some songs. So Nathan's just going back to see how she is. She's also, by the way, a fiddler. She grew up playing Scottish fiddle, and she's getting that back into her life at this point. This is pretty early in the book, but Nathan, one of the things I love about Nathan is that whatever he thinks he's thinking about, he's always kind of thinking about the music. And as this, what I'm going to do is I'll read up to where this song begins, and then we'll play the song, and then I'll finish the reading. And Nathan asks a question. Anybody out there in Simply Folkland, if you've been to a folk concert, at some point you have asked yourself this question that Nathan asks. Nathan walked down the back hallway, up a short flight of stairs and into a large rectangular room with something fuzzy on the floor that probably used to be a carpet. There were about 50 people there, divided into several jams, each with a handful of musicians and a few people just listening. Dim overhead lighting cast a yellowish glow on everything, like a lamp-lit room in an old house. Kit sat with a half-dozen jammers at a small table by the far end of the room. They had finished a tune and were laughing and talking in the time-honored way of the jam. Applause is considered bad form because it suggests a performance atmosphere. So after a tune, there's a period of idle chatter, sipping beers, laughing, and shuffling chairs until somebody begins another tune. There is an unspoken order to all this, but nobody really knows what it is. It's simply the way it's always been, since the first caveman noticed his neighbor beating on a rock, wandered over and said, "Hey, I got a stick too." A young guitarist in a faded Boston Celtics jersey, neatly trimmed beard stubble and Martin guitar baseball cap, suddenly began to sing a traditional cowboy song, Colorado Trail. Nathan walked closer, putting a finger over his lips when a few people started to say hi. He wanted to listen.
Eyes like a morning star, cheeks like a rose. Laura was a pretty girl, everybody knows. Weep all ye falling rains, whale winds wail. All along, along, along the Colorado Trail. Ride through the lonely night, ride through the day. Keep that herd moving on its way. Weep all ye falling rains, whale winds wail. All along, along, along the Colorado Trail. Ride through the stormy night, dark is the sky. Wish I'd stayed in Abilene, where it's mighty warm and dry. Weep all ye falling rains, whale winds wail. All along, along, along the coast. just like a prairie flower, laughing all the day. Laura was a pretty girl, now she's gone away. Weep all ye falling rains, wail winds wail,
could almost hear the slow padding of horses and cattle in the easy gait of the song. It vaguely tells a story about a pretty girl named Laura, whom the cowboy loves and misses, but the song never explains who she is or what's happened to her. She's simply gone away. As a young man, that drove Nathan crazy. He tried to learn the song a few times, but without knowing what happened to Laura or even what her relationship was to the cowboy, he didn't know how to approach it. Now he thought those omissions were brilliant, because the song really isn't about Laura, or even the lovelorn cowboy. It's simply about being alone in a lonely place and wishing that you weren't. Nathan certainly knew what that felt like. Bobbing his head lightly to the beat, Nathan closed his eyes and wondered what it was about sad songs that appeal to us so much. Do we like being sad? Even the up-tempo songs at the jam were usually about train wrecks, dead mothers, ghastly murders, and ghostly lovers walking these hills in long black veils. Maybe it's like those actors who say they prefer playing villains because they're more interesting. Our dark feelings have more complex palettes, at least in art they do. But Nathan had learned that form usually follows function in traditional music. Perhaps our unhappy feelings are more in need of examining than our happy ones. Who needs to solve happiness? We need to understand the dark sides of life. That's where the dangers are. Why else would cowboys have sung all those sad love songs? It was the one time they could display their inner selves, explore their feelings, and share them with friends. And those deeper feelings need attention, even on a cattle drive. Leave them alone too long, unexamined and unexpressed, and they fester like an untreated wound. Maybe that's why Colorado Trail leads us away from the particulars about Laura and the cowboy. Laura becomes everybody's absent love, and the cowboy's loneliness becomes everybody's loneliness. And doesn't the simple act of sharing that in a song make us a little less lonely?
That's Scott Alaric reading from his book, Revival, a Folk Music Novel, reading in the voice of Nathan Warren, who is the one of the two protagonists of the story. And I also want to add, too, that we heard you singing Colorado Trail from your CD called All That Is True.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, that is... lonely, sad music, it can be so cathartic, I think, to move emotions. And there is that feeling of, you know, we're sharing this life together. We all can relate to those sad emotions. And it's, those are the songs, that the questions that we ask ourselves.
Sure, sure. And Kit frequently mentions, says about the same thing about all of her favorite songwriters, which is that they knew how she felt. And you know, when she was a teenager and young adult, she felt like we all worry that we're the only ones in the world who worry about these things or have these problems. And when we can hear a song that takes us into such an intimate place, so much deeper than, because it's got the sort of the emotional DNA built into the melody, and you hear a song that knows how you feel, And suddenly, as Nathan reflects, you realize you're not so alone in the world to feel the way you do. And she, Kit, just has this almost adoration for the songwriters who were able to do that for her. It's one of the things that drew her to folk music.
And then she starts to do it herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I came to the conclusion writing the book, in the process of writing the book, that Kit is not only the smartest character in the book, but that she's smarter than I am. I'm not quite sure how that's possible, but she also did more to participate in her own creation. And through her, I really learned how to listen to the characters. And it's a strange process, but I recognized it because songs will do the same thing. Songs, when you're writing a song, it will come to life. And if you learn how to listen to it, it will help you create it. And the characters did the same thing. And there was this magical moment in writing the book where the questions stopped being, what should Nathan do here? And became, what would Nathan do here? And from then on, it was, I almost felt like a journalist again, like, you know, where I was simply covering the story and observing and reporting on what was happening.
Mm-hmm. Almost channeling your higher self through these characters.
Yeah, and lower sometimes.
Well, let's talk about your background a little bit as a journalist. I mentioned at the beginning that you're a writer, but not just a writer. You wrote for many, many years with the Boston Globe.
Yeah, I was the folk music critic for the Boston Globe for a little over 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And you covered a lot of new acts coming out, Annie DeFranco and
Dar Williams.
Yeah.
Ellis Paul. Yeah, it was an amazing moment to be able to cover, because folk music was, there was a real revival, a real renaissance going on in the Boston area that's still going on. And it's one of the things that drew me to Boston, but I really didn't anticipate having a writing career. As I used to joke, I went there to get the media attention, not to become it. But it was great. When I did that, I realized that I was a writer who's also a musician, not the other way around.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned when we were first meeting today that Utah Phillips talked about your career as a journalist. What did he say? He's such a character. Was such a character.
Yeah, Utah used to refer to my my gig at the Boston Globe as Alaric's journalism ruse. But you know, Utah loved a good ruse. You know, he would say that kid's got what a scam that guy. That kid's what a dodge. What a ruse. He's what a con. He's got those people thinking that he's a journalist. My hat's off to the kid.
Well, and you've also done
Utah, by the way, plays a very important role in the book. There are a lot of real people in the book. I don't make them part of the fictional story, but there's a story told about Utah that becomes a very important story in the book.
He's such an important figure in folk music.
He certainly was to me, too.
Yeah. And I also want to touch briefly on the fact that you did some work for public radio, since you're on public radio airwaves right now. What did you do?
Well, I was the folk critic for Here and Now, the WBUR nationally syndicated noon news program, for about 7 years. And that was the thing I liked the most about that, and I'll bet, Stephanie, that you know you feel this way too, that when it got time to say, this is what the music sounds like, I got to say, this exactly, listen, this is how it sounds. This is, you know, don't take my word for it. Here it is.
Right. Here it is. That's right. What do you think?
Yeah. That was one of the real challenges with Revival, too, that I really wanted this to be a book about music, not just a book about music careers, which is so often what happens, but like in that passage with Colorado Trail, I wanted to explore the wonder of music and what it is that moves us so much about music and what it is that's so powerful and what it is that about music, especially folk music, that can bring generations and cultures together the way it does. And I really think that writing Revival is the most musical thing I've ever done.
Well, it certainly is it's an all-encompassing book where you touch on all the deepest things, and you touch on the creative process, on the personalities and characters, on the social background. It's really a wonderful book. I enjoyed it immensely.
Thank you.
I want to ask about Kit and the song that she eventually gives birth to?
Yeah, I wanted to show the process of songwriting and the struggle to create a song. So Nathan writes in fits and starts, writes a song throughout the book, and I picked one of my songs for that, actually the title song of that CD, All That Is True. But I didn't dare try to write songs in the voice of Kit Palmer because she's so far from my cultural experience. So I asked other young female songwriters permission to use their songs as Kit Palmer songs. Anja Duvakot is one of them. But for this song, which is actually called Arlington, that Kit writes about midway through the book, I asked Nikki Mehta of Waylon Jennings. And it was really amazing because when she started reading the book, even before she got to the part where this song is in, she emailed me and said, I can't believe you wanted me to write one of Kit Palmer's songs because I feel like we must have been separated at birth.
She really related.
Yeah. This is that song. And that is Arlington by the wonderful Waylon Jennings. And that song written by Nikki Mehta, which is a song that the fictional character Kit Palmer writes about halfway through the book Revival.
You know what I love about Kit as a character? That she was a fiddler as a kid, mm-hmm. and had abandoned it for a little while, yeah. and it was bringing it back and enjoying picking it up again and mm-hmm. also using it to punctuate her music.
Yeah, I think so many of the young people coming up in folk music today, like Kit Palmer, are people who grew up in the culture, the tradition of the modern folk world. And she grows up doing Scottish fiddle contests and things like that. And when she gets back in touch with that, it's not just that she's getting back in touch with traditional music. She's getting in touch with her own personal musical tradition. It's the music that's the deepest inside her. And that really creates kind of a blossoming of her own music, as it always does in art when we get in touch with our own roots.
It sure does.
As we'd say out here, ruts.
Now, why fiction after so many years as a journalist?
I realize that there are some truths you need fiction to tell. There are, when I put together my first book, which is an anthology of stories that I wrote for The Globe and other places called Deep Community, I realized there were things about what this world is like, particularly emotional things that I'd never really been able to express in journalism. How it feels to write a song, how it feels to be worried that you're never going to write. You write one verse and you're never going to find the second one, and what it's like to experience that mystical connection. When at one point Nathan realizes that tradition is really just another word for community, and when you realize that community can exist not only with the people around you but with people who came before you, what a powerful thing that is, and just what this music feels like and what this world feels like. We were talking about before this wonderful energy that volunteers. I dedicated the book to the volunteers because I think they're the real energy source. They're the real fuel that keeps this music going. So I wanted to show what it's like to live in folk music in the 21st century.
Well, and what I love too is that you bring the music into the 21st century based on the traditions, and you talk very much about traditional music and how traditional music informs today's songwriters. Yeah. And I think that's important. It's easy to look at it in a scholarly way, that it's this isolated music that has to be in a museum somehow. But it really, it's not. It's living, and it's always evolving and always changing. And I think you make that point beautifully in the book.
Thank you. You can almost make the point that what defines traditional music as different from other forms of music or art is that it exists in a constant state of change.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan refers to it as a living thing, that it's a river still running. And at one point he thinks that to try to categorize it or fix it at one particular point in time is like trying to pin a butterfly that's still in flight.
That's a very good analogy.
Thanks.
In the book, Nathan becomes a lecturer. He becomes almost a professor of folk music.
He thinks of himself as a professional elder at one point. And it's a big part of the book about that cultural conversation is wanting to explore this idea of becoming an elder in a social way, not as a parent or as a boss. But I think it's a way that our cultural conversation has been interrupted a little bit in these times, partly because us baby boomers have been led to believe that we're supposed to stay young for the rest of our lives, that they called us the youth generation. Talk about setting us up for disappointment.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Nathan throughout the book is telling these stories and sharing this lore. And through a lot of his revival comes from seeing the value that his lifetime of knowledge has for Kit, and Kit spends a great deal of her energy in the book trying to show him that there is great value in what he knows and the life he's lived.
Now, have you taken that from real life? Do you lecture? Do you talk about folk music and the history of folk music?
Yeah, I do. I do a lot of workshops and sort of discussion things where a combination of live and archival recorded music and talk on topics like politics and folk music or the history of songwriting. And because of my position at the Globe for so many years, you know, people sort of see me kind of that way that Kit sees Nathan as sort of a professional elder, and I love it. I love it because what draws me to this music is that it's all about real people, and I say with Nathan that he, from the very start when he heard folk songs, he felt real people in them like veins beneath the skin, and he wanted to go down in there and know those people.
In the book, Nathan tells a number of true stories when he's doing some of his lecturing, and one of those is about Pete Seeger.
Yes, this is. I couldn't resist. I write a whole novel. It is fiction, but I couldn't resist putting in some of my favorite true stories about folk music. And if I had to pick one all-time favorite true story about folk music, this would be it.
Let's hear it.
Fame is a funny duck in the folk world. Folks' notion of fame has always been both larger and smaller than the kind of fame pop culture celebrates. Nathan wanted to explore that because it showed some essential demarcation points between folk and the mainstream music industry. He knew a couple of stories that fit the bill. In the 1970s, Pete Seeger was invited to sing in Barcelona, Spain. Francisco Franco's fascist government, the last of the dictatorships that started World War II, was still in power, but declining. A pro-democracy movement was gaining strength, and to prove it, they invited America's best-known freedom singer to Spain. More than 100,000 people were in the stadium where rock bands had played all day. But the crowd had come for Seeger. As Pete prepared to go on, government officials handed him a list of songs he was not allowed to sing. Pete studied it mournfully, saying it looked an awful lot like his set list. But they insisted he must not sing any of these songs. Pete took the government's list of banned songs and strolled on stage. He held up the paper and said, "I've been told that I'm not allowed to sing these songs." He grinned at the crowd and said, "So I'll just play the chords. Maybe you know the words." They didn't say anything about you singing them. He strummed his banjo to one song after another, and they all sang. 100,000 defiant freedom singers breaking the law with Pete Seeger, filling the stadium with words their government did not want them to hear, words they all knew and had sung together in secret circles for years. What could the government do? Arrest 100,000 singers? It had been beaten by a few banjo chords and the fame of a man whose songs were on the lips of the whole world. Folk is thought of as a fringe music, but what rock star has that kind of fame? Which of the world's great pop stars could have done what Pete Seeger did, knowing that 100,000 people from another country, speaking another language, would know the words to the songs he came to sing for them, and that they would rise and do it in defiance of their government? That is fame.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, hammer in the evening.
Great. Pete Seeger, if I had a hammer, not just Pete Seeger, but the entire crowd. He's so good at getting people to join him.
Yeah.
That we were listening to a CD called Songs of Hope and Struggle from the Smithsonian Folkways label. And we also heard a reading of you telling that story.
Yeah, set to music by a great Boston musician, Jake Armerding.
Well, Scott, thank you very, very much for coming in and speaking with me and sharing your wonderful love of folk music not just Wisconsin Public Radio listeners, but with readers all across the country and across the world. Sounds like it's being really well received, and justly so.
It's quite an adventure, and thanks so much for having me. It's great to come back home to Simply Folk.
Well, good. If you would like more information about Revival, a folk music novel, or more information about Scott Alaric and his music, all you have to do is go to www.scottalaric, and that is scottalaric.com.
And if you have trouble remembering that, you can also get there by revivalnovel.com.
That does it, huh? Okay. Mm-hmm. And I have a link on our Facebook page as well.
Great.
So that, for those of you that do Facebook, another good way to find out information. Well, thank you very much again, Scott. Best of luck in all your future endeavors.
Thank you, and thanks for all you do to keep our music on the airwaves, Stephanie.
Thanks.